Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. And Adam, I thought I was going to be the first one in the paper from the team to be surrounded by cops, you know, but it seems that you beat me to it, so congratulations.
You can be the first one charged for something, or first one to make the police blotter.
No comment.
Or let the first one in handcuffs. It's
no comment.
There's still a lot of ground to cover. Anyway,
we've got time.
Speaking of ground, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today, we will be talking more about hacktivism in the form of boycott Sears. People are mad, and understandably so, about the way Sears workers are being treated as the store chain restructures. But are they helping or hurting? And then we will catch up with the Unite the Right effort as the United Conservative Party of Alberta finalized its arrangement last weekend and began their search for a leader. So how's it going so far? And then finally, we will talk about Ontario Proud and whether or not we should have pride in the political discourse it promotes. But first, this week in insanity has been crazier than usual, believe me. So that's President Donald Trump. He's so far this week alone banned transgendered people from serving in the armed forces, done nothing but sort of threaten and saber rattle at members of his own party if they don't vote for health care reform. He's repeatedly undermined his own attorney general. He went to the Boy Scouts jamboree and made what was possibly one of his worst quote-unquote stump speeches ever at a supposed to be non-political event, which the Boy Scouts...
Who the hell wants to talk about politics?
And then he talked about politics for an hour. And then the Boy Scouts had to apologize. It's just, I mean, it's one of those weeks, and I said this on the website, it's like every hour is like a week's worth of news, and you get to the end of the day, and you watch these news shows that are like on for an hour, and they're like they have no idea how to start or where to start or where to begin. And it's not just the stuff like going on, like the Sessions tweets about how he's disappointed in Sessions. It's, you know, there's serious stuff that's going unremarked upon as well. And I'll just throw out an example because I want to make sure I get this out. There's a man named Brian Benzikowski, and he was a partner in a law firm called Kirkland & Ellis LLP. And he is the candidate for leading the criminal justice, the criminal justice unit of the Department of Justice. So this is the guy who's like the head of all the making sure all crimes are prosecuted. And he worked for a law firm representing a Russian bank that is currently being investigated by the FBI for possible collusion with the Trump Organization, because apparently their computers show that they were sort of in touch with Trump Organization computers one too many times. And so this is the kind of story that will get maybe 2 seconds on air, if it gets any time on air at all. Usually it's one of these items in the ticker that'll just scrolls by that nobody gives any attention to, because, you know, something like this morning where Anthony Scaramucci, the new communications director of the White House, calls CNN first thing in the morning to complain about how he thinks the chief of staff leaked his public information. A financial disclosure form, which is public information, but he accuses the chief of staff of leaking it and how it could be treasonous, basically, and how he's calling the FBI on it.
Like, I can't keep up. you can keep up, but it's so overwhelming. And every time there's an announcement or a statement or whatever comes out, I just keep wondering what's going to trip this guy up. This is what they do in the States. They do it here, too. We have the 100 days, and they have 6 months, and then a year in review. And, like, the stuff that keeps coming out, just to touch on the transgendered people in the military, like, comes out announced in a tweet initially, and then it just kind of explodes from there. What was his statement? Was it that trans people cause tremendous medical costs and disruption?
Yes.
And looking at the numbers that were put out with that in terms of how many trans people are estimated to be in the American military, it's 0.2%.
of the medical budget for the military.
0.2% of people in the military are considered to be trans. And maybe it's 0.2 for the medical budget as well. Wasn't the comparison made about they spend more on Viagra than they would have to on anybody
trans? No, it's the medical costs, they have that between 2.4 on the low end and 8.4 on the high end, $8.4 million. But the military spends $84 million on Viagra and similar medications. So that's your Cialis's and all the Viagra knockoffs.
Because that's mandatory, right? You need that somehow. Well, who knows? Who knows the rationale? But there's obviously a reason. You know, maybe, is it Pfizer? I don't want to name names. Let's move on. there may be a connection there, all I'm saying. But this is how Trump works. He looks for the scapegoat, whether it's the banning of people from certain countries, a.k.a. Muslims, the Mexican wall. He just looks for somebody to nail, and in this case, it's trans people. And of course, right away, and I knew this would happen too, there was somebody who spoke out who was, I didn't read the whole story, that there was somebody who was a hero, like an actual bona fide war hero. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, say it to my face that you don't think I can defend you kind of thing, right? You knew it was going to happen because it just is. So it's like, and that this is one tiny thing, and just like you were saying off the top this past week, in terms of the 6 month review, it seems Trump's approval rating, depending on the poll, is somewhere between 36% and 40%. It's 50% in the counties and places that where people actually voted for him. The red states all over the place. Did you see that map? It was all red.
Yeah.
As he said to the Boy Scouts, they said it was the lowest approval rating of a president at the six-month point in 70 years. Who was president 70 years ago? I don't know. Truman?
70 years ago?
Yeah,
that was Truman.
Would have been Truman, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Harry S. Truman.
So here's a trivia question for you. But he's had one solo press conference. It was just him on his own, not somebody, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
42 bills.
That was a beauty, to use a Trumpism.
Signed 42 bills and put through zero pieces of major legislation. This is according to the fake news people at CNN. So way more statistics as well. But of course, it's all incorrect. It's all fake. They made it up. And I'm sure Trump is tweeting right now about us talking about him. Those guys in Canada, they don't know anything.
The fake open sources.
Fake open sources. Totally fake. They made it up.
Well, the transgender thing, I mean, in so much as anything Trump does, it all seems to come out of nowhere. But a lot of people have sort of read that as a concession to the Sessions supporters, because Jeff Sessions, of course, is very anti-LGBT, thinks it should be legal to discriminate against LGBT people, or it should be illegal for others to discriminate. It may not necessarily be he himself who wants to do the discriminating.
Oh, he probably does.
Well, no doubt.
Goes to the turf, right?
But, I mean, a lot of people were seeing that. But on the other hand, you have Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, who's apparently on holiday right now. Apparently he was furious about it because it did not come from his office. It did not seem to come from anyone at the Department of Defense. It seemed to be one of these things where Trump rolled over in the morning and
Trump's Twitter account.
Yeah, and woke up and said, you know what? I don't want transgender people in the military anymore.
Somebody like Bannon is just standing there in the morning and going, hey, Trump, those trans people, you better do something. He wakes up and goes, yes, trans. And just tweets. Suppose he's had 1,000 tweets in the 6 month period as well, which sounds about right. I thought it would be more, but he's just shy of 1,000 tweets in his 6 month period, which is probably a first for a president. If he'll go down for anything, he'll be known as the Twitter president.
The Twitter in chief.
Whether he's the worst ever still remains to be seen. There's still time, but
there's still time to get better.
Oh,
there's not much time to get much worse. But yeah, the whole transgender thing. First of all, because, you know, he's a Republican, but he's not a Republican from the Bible Belt or from some small town in the Midwest or from some farming community where you would know like the one
belt.
Or two gay people in town, whether they were out or not. He's from New York, where people have been out loud, proud, and get used to it for 40
years.
AKA
the wild side, yeah.
Yeah, the wild side, exactly. So, you know,
I never saw anybody trans when I lived there. It'll be I don't know.
But so this is it just seems bizarre to me that he would suddenly go after these people. And then the Defense Department supposedly was doing a 6 month review because for trans people, indeed, all queer people to be out while serving is still a relatively new thing. So they were doing some kind of review, a six-month review, and that is, it was going to take 6 months. But it's only been a month since they decided to take the review, and I guess Trump thought, well, that's enough time. And in the meantime, you know, there's a lot of people who are trans who are in the service who are now wondering, well, where does my career go from here? And there were a couple of retired military people who were trans on The Daily Show last night. Mm-hmm. And they had been retired before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. But one of them made a very good point that, you know, if they decide to ban trans people, if that becomes a thing, that means if you are out as a trans person in the military, and not everyone is out, there are people who still don't want to come out because of, mm-hmm. you know, the pressures and the social pressures. But that person will be dishonorably discharged.
Oh, really?
Which gets stapled to every job application, every loan application, every piece of paper you would need to live the rest of your life gets stapled to from that point on, that you were dishonorably discharged. It doesn't matter that you weren't the one that didn't act dishonorably, that you were dishonorably discharged because you were a man who dressed as a woman or vice versa.
I think it's going to go to the Supreme Court. I mean, it can't go anywhere else, right? There's no way. It's a human rights issue, plain and simple, right? So I don't... There's been so much other stuff that's gone to the court and been squashed and quashed. It's like, this has to be up there with that as well. I can't see it.
Well, if it gets any further than this, because the military, apparently the Pentagon is stepping in. It's like, no, it's fine. Everybody keep serving.
As you were.
Yes, exactly. Because the flip side of it, too, is that this is an all-volunteer force. Everybody in
for now, yeah.
Don't go there.
No.
So everybody has sort of specialized skill. Everyone is specially trained. Hundreds of thousands of dollars go into training each and every soldier, no matter their, you know, age, rank, mm-hmm. gender orientation, sexual
All
orientation,
Americans.
What have you. So, you know, you could be throwing out people who have valuable technology skills, mm-hmm. valuable language
Chelsea
skills.
Manning.
Yeah. Exactly.
Who commented on this on Twitter saying, you guys are ridiculous, pretty much. I can't remember the exact. It's like, come on, really?
But I mean, it just, he throws a bottle rocket into a situation and the firecracker goes off and then everybody's looking at where the noise came from. Well, excuse me. This other stuff is going on, like Ben Skowski. So, and then... We haven't mentioned the Mooch yet, have we?
Oh, Scaramucci.
Scary Mooch, yeah. Mm. He was appointed, this is what slays me, is like he was appointed the communications director of the White House, replacing Sean Spicer, who, you know, we won't have Spicy to kick around anymore.
Spicy, oh no.
He reportedly left the White House with a smile on his face.
Good for him in some ways. I don't know. I sort of feel for the guy a little bit.
I don't feel for him at all.
No, especially after the SNL.
He knew what he was getting into, and if he didn't, then he should have.
Oh, yeah.
But Scaramucci, New York business guy, the guys on Pod Save America described him thusly as what Trump sees when he looks in the mirror.
or wants to see, I guess.
Yeah. So he's
that special mirror that makes you a little bit thinner and a little bit younger.
More hair, with more realistic hair.
More jewels, more
realistic skin tone.
But I'm probably more qualified to do that position than he is, right?
Than he is, so, because we actually have experience in communication.
We don't have the money and the schmooze, so we just don't get it. So.
Yeah, I've actually
not that I applied or Trump asked me or Adam for that matter,
no. But I've done, like, press campaigns, and I've mm-hmm. done, you know, promotions and written press releases and things, which would sort of be the underlying basis of sort of a communications job.
Are you listening, Donald? Because Donaldson needs the gig.
I don't need
that
the gig.
That would be something. Oh, my God.
I don't need the gig that badly. No. I still have scruples.
Yeah.
I don't have money, but I have scruples. This Scaramucci guy, and then I was watching the coverage last Friday, and people were like, "Oh, he's so slick, and he's so cool, and he answered all his press questions," and I'm just like, "Are you people high?" Like, because he's not sweating up there and yelling and you know, having his voice crack and looking like he's like on the brink of a nervous collapse, like Spicer, you'll take this?
Hmm.
At least Spicer was like some kind of political professional. And then this morning you have Scaramucci calling into CNN because his his financial disclosure forms, which is a public document. He said it was leaked, and he said it was leaked by Rance Priebus, the chief of staff at the White House,
serious
and that he wanted the FBI to investigate who leaked this public document anyone could have had access to. And he called in CNN first thing this morning and ranted and raved about it.
My money's on the New York Times, but... Or somebody at CNN, right? Leaking the publicly available news. It just gets weirder. Like, daily.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But, I mean, so this was someone who, like, less than a week ago was Mr. Slick, Mr. This is an improvement over what was going on. And, of course, the coup de grace was that he was on the Sunday show. I was talking about how he's going to make sure that, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, like, gets up there and that her hair and makeup is better.
He actually said that?
Oh, yeah. Oh. So, I don't know. I can't remember if he tweeted it or something he said out
loud.
Trump
would say, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's the guy Trump sees in the mirror. He's the magic mirror guy. Mm. And I don't like Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
No, but can you imagine what she's thinking when the guys, if he says that, it's like, you know, like, an unreal.
Well, the worst part is it does look like she's paying more attention to her hair and makeup. So, it's like, not only did he say it, but she took it to heart instead of saying, you know what?
Or was instructed to.
Oh, yeah. Right? But instead of saying, screw you, I'm a professional woman. I'm not a model. You know, people shouldn't be paying attention to how much eyeshadow I have on. They should be paying attention to the lies I'm spouting on behalf of the administration.
But you get the impression that they secretly want a model. It's like Berlusconi those models that won seats in the Italian parliament. It's
Ivanka,
like,
Trump. Anyone?
Yeah, or Ivanka Trump, I guess.
I just think people should listen to my father, the president.
Handbag designer and stateswoman extraordinaire.
Politics are just too destructive. I don't see myself as a politician. I just work in the White House.
Oh, I'm sure everybody else at that table was like, oh, give me strength. Pass the wines. Pass the wines.
Speaking of handbags, you can get handbags at Sears. I'm not sure if you need Ivanka Trump handbags at Sears. But maybe
I haven't shopped for one lately,
longer.
So I'm not really sure.
Yeah, tell me about it. Who has time for handbag shopping, really?
No, I'm more of a wallet person. bought luggage there, though. A little piece of luggage was on sale.
Oh, way to
That's
do
the last thing I'm ever going to buy there, by the way. But tell the story, Adam, and then we'll get stuck into Sears.
So, as you know, Sears is in sort of a reorganization phase. They're on the brink of bankruptcy, and they have made several court filings to sort of protect themselves from going under completely as they kind of restructure and reorganize. In the process, about 59 stores are being closed, including one in Cambridge. I believe that's the closest one to us. But that also means 2,900 jobs are being lost. Not good-paying retail jobs, but jobs just the same. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, about $9.2 million is being spent to give key staff bonuses as to sort of incentivize them staying on board as Sears goes through reorganization. And it's kind of funny because I read that and my first thought was, shouldn't still having a job at Sears be incentive enough when 2,900 people are lost theirs? And also, to put it in context, there's 14,000 Sears employees across Canada. So that's, you know, I didn't do the math before the show, but that's about less than 10%.
Yeah.
Maybe around 10%.
But it's been implied in a couple of places that you're hurting the people still employed at Sears by supporting this boycott. And this is, people are like online, they'll be like, Sears, boycott Sears, you're going to stop going there. I should have put a bet on the Cambridge store closing because my now famous piece of luggage went looking over there. I don't know why we ended up over there. It doesn't matter. And the place looked like a bomb had hit it, and it also looked like that it was a sell-off. The way it was all, it was supposedly under construction. Everything was in piles. It was absolutely nuts. And I'm thinking, I don't think they're renovating at all. You just get the sense, it's like there was a big drape up, and it was like, then they were just, it was an everything must go feel. It was like, everything's just in piles. It's going to go. Now, those of you that have been listening to the station for a while know that I hosted a couple of shows, the Working Week and the Labor Show. I was focusing mostly on work and labor issues. And around 2008, which was a terrible year, obviously, the story weekly was something like this, was this company X has declared bankruptcy or they're leaving the country. And then within a week or two, or sometimes the same day, it would be, but the executives are getting X amount. And this wasn't just in left-wing media. It was just a statement of fact that it's like, okay, this is how it works. You've done well, guys. You've put us in bankruptcy protection or whatever. I know that sounds counterintuitive and ridiculous, but the bottom line is increasing. The share price is going up again, so we're going to give you a bunch of money because that's how it works, right? And it's the people hear this, and I think regardless of where you are on the spectrum, it bugs people a lot because they know, you know, you probably know somebody that works or has worked at Sears at some point, right? So now in Sears' case this time, the stock price didn't really rebound too much. It sort of fluctuates between, like, I don't know, like, it was 90 cents, went down to 30 around the time of this announcement, and it's bumped up a little bit. That's not much. But when this starts happening and they go into bankruptcy protection, or the Company Creditors Arrangement Act, which is which removes all of their obligations. The same thing happened with Stelco, that they remove the onus is no longer on them to pay pensions because they're in the special realm of bankruptcy protection. They don't have to pay pensions. They don't have to pay severance. They don't have to pay benefits or anything. They can just say, sorry, we're broke. We don't have any money. Meanwhile, there's still a functioning business there, and they're paying the executives. And yet they somehow say, oh, we can't do that because of this and that. And ideally, I guess, the company recovers. They come out of the protection. But, of course, when they come out of that, that's when everything changes. Something will change. The benefits will get whacked. The pensions will get robbed out. There will be something that they have now that won't survive this, because they'll say, well, we don't have that money. And it's absolute nonsense. I almost said something else, but anyway, so that's my version of it in events. I don't know, Adam.
Yeah,
it's pretty much covers it, right? It's like,
no, I understand the idea behind it. And one of the spokespeople said it was, you know, because when it looks like the company's going under, people start looking for other work and people start abandoning ship. And I understand that. I saw the other day, because I'm kind of searching for a job right now myself, is there was a posting for Sears. Sears is looking for, is hiring people, the Guelph Sears.
Really?
Yeah. So
what's the job?
I can't. It was like for an associate or something like that.
Yeah, so it's sorting the things that are going to be sold off, probably.
Well, maybe, but my first thought was, well, why would I take a job when in maybe a couple of months it'll be gone? Or why would somebody, anybody, you know, person X, apply for a job when it might be gone in a couple of months?
Probably because they really need it. But I mean, really need it. But
well, even, but I'll point this out again. Businesses around here, like Walmart and the Loblaw stores, are having trouble attracting people because the job market here is fairly good right now. So, you know, even the desperate of the desperate aren't having to, you know, go to Walmart or get a job there. Anyway, the question is, will Sears come out of this? And that's highly dubious. The other question I have is, how many of these people who are hashtag boycott Sears are people who would go to Sears in the first place? I do wonder, like, how many of these people are like, well, I'm never going to shop at Sears again. And if you go in and, like, ask them, when was the last time you bought anything from Sears? I wonder what the answer would be. And then the final piece is, yeah, you know, it's some people who have pointed out, like, retail gurus, kind of the, you know, promoting a boycott of Sears does nothing to help the people who still have a job at Sears. And I get that, too. But it all comes back to the fact that in this day and age, this news gets out. When a company is going under and getting protection from creditors, and then they sign a bunch of bonus checks to executives, look what happened to, Bombardier.
Yep.
They got federal bailout money, and then all of a sudden everybody's getting bonuses and people are ticked off, and rightly so. Yeah. Just from an optics point of view, forget about the fact that, like, we want to hold on to valuable human resources point of view. Just from an optics point of view, why don't these companies learn this lesson? I mean, are they just so craven? It's just like, yeah, I understand you want to hold on to talent, and you sometimes need to incentivize that with money. And the worker point of view, that just having a job is good enough, maybe a bit different from when you're looking at it from the top side down. But you know this is going to be a PR nightmare. You know it's going to be a disaster, but you're still tossing these bonus checks out anyway.
But, I mean, is there not a problem with the talent if the thing is tanking? There are lots of lots of factors, but there are also lots of ways to restructure something so you can make money. I mean, retail has taken a whack in general.
Sears whack attack.
Sears in particular has gone from like $6.7 billion in 2001 down to $2.6 billion, and that's just in Canada. I mean, that is huge. It's mm-hmm. sinking yearly, just sink, right? So what it's... To me, just my perspective of it is like with the bonuses for the execs, you just take the money and run when you can, and then you know they'll pop up at some other company, no doubt. Should mention too, of the 2,900 being laid off, there was 500 that were just let go like that day. It's like, okay, get your stuff, get out, right? So you know, and nothing. It sounds like nothing for them. A lot of Sears was one of those places where people worked lots of years. Like if you started working at Sears, I remember there was one. Near us, I grew up in Lakeview. I'm sure you've been in the Dixie Value Mall, Sears. It was the outlet, but it was. This is the thing now. You go into Sears, like seems to me the one in Guelph is trying to echo the outlet style because they have more space now because they've sold off the electronics department. You can't buy a stereo or anything there anymore. The appliance department is still there, but it's a spinoff as well. It's actually run by another company. I found this out. We went and bought a fridge. It's like, because we always bought our appliances at Sears. There's a bit of loyal. I don't know if it's much the loyalty to the appliances, but you can get North American made. And it was it Debbie? I mean, it was the same woman for you go. And then you need something, you need a stove 15 years later. And it's like, oh, it's still you. You know, well, I mean, that's just gone. Mastercraft is gone. The tool division, I think, doesn't exist anymore. So they're just, once the pieces start to go, automotive, you can't, you know, but. Who's filling that gap? You go to Costco and get your tires changed. You go to Walmart and get your tires changed. You can get a fridge. You know, Costco has two fridges, but it's like, well, I guess that one will do, right? You don't need 20 different ones. So all of these things are just sort of chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. And if they don't come up with something, and I don't know if the Sears thing is going to be the thing. It's Sears from passing through. It still seems sort of busy, but is it busy enough to sort of revive their fortunes? I don't know. It's hard. You can't tell until you see the receipts and say, hey, this store's doing okay.
I do wonder that because...
Is it Flin Flon? There was all the... They named all the places where the... You look at it and say, oh, I can't believe that area has a Sears. Not to say they shouldn't have one. But I think Medicine had it. It's like you say, oh, that must be a significant store there, right? Mm. So the loss is huge and not just the people... Working at Sears that lose their jobs, all the ancillary stuff that's around just goes, right? So,
well, and then, you know, all the people who distribute and manufacture some things. And
down the chain.
Because Sears was not like a made in China outlet store, like, you know, you can describe Walmart as, or even Zellers when it was around. This was sort of a medium high end. This was a middle class store for middle class customers.
But, and that's what's changed too, because I noticed that when it was Canada 150, everything's branded Maple Leafs, Maple Leaf, Maple Leaf, Maple Leaf. You turn it over, it's China. So if you're going to buy the China stuff, why would you take it with a $10 or $15 markup when you can go to Walmart and Costco or wherever, and it's the same thing pretty much.
Yeah.
It's just, oh man.
But there was a bit of, there used to be a bit of prestige with Sears.
Like Eaton's is another example. Who are gone? How long has Eaton's been gone now?
Well, Eaton's is long gone.
No, but it's structured in the same.
Right.
Eaton's one of the originals in this country, right?
And then Eaton's the had Bay. Like mall, had, you know, also had mall real estate when that was still worth something as well.
Right downtown, the purpose built downtown Guelph.
Yeah.
To have Eaton's as an anchor store.
Yeah.
And revive the fortunes of our...
it's known now, this Lehman Center.
Yeah, revive the fortunes of our downtown and look at it. I guess that's for another day as well. Look at our downtown.
Well, I mean, I just think... we didn't have a Sears where I grew up in Georgetown. We had the catalog store. And it was always kind of a big deal to go into the catalog store and order from the catalog and have it delivered to the store.
There was a catalog store at the corner of Wellington and Gordon.
Sure.
In the dry cleaners. It's like, but there's a Sears, but... You know, it kept going, and then all of a sudden, that's gone too, right? The catalog stores are toast, aren't they? I think there's just...
Oh, no, well, I know the one in Georgetown's long gone. I think it's a Subway now. Anyway.
That's the future.
The future is in sandwich artistry, and the future is in music, and then we will come back with some more topics for discussion. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
future of the neon
god. That was Funyap from the album Palimpsest. The song was Neon God. Funyap rocking the golden bus in the ward last night. My goodness, I only heard the sound check. I was like, that sounds amazing. I don't know if it's because it was on a bus or what, but it was pretty good. So
the bus makes everything better.
The bus made it good.
Don't believe the hype. The bus is great.
So, yeah, there's some serious acoustic magic going on there. So, and the Golden Bus left on its tour today. Hopefully, we wish them well. Heading out to Sappy Fest in Nova Scotia. Maybe we'll play something Sappy Festy next week. So, keeping it local, keeping it real here on CFRU 93.3 FM.
Good job.
Slid that in there, yes.
We're not being local for this next story. It's more of an Alberta story, but it's still interesting. You may remember when Jason Kenney won the PC leadership for Alberta. He promised to unite the right, and it is mission accomplished. Last weekend, they voted to unite the right. 95% of the PCs and 95% of the Wild Rose voted to merge. They are now the UCP.
That's almost, original, eh?
Almost an unfortunate acronym, too.
The UCP.
The United Conservative Party. A leadership race has begun. Brian Jean, who used to be leader of the Wild Rose Party, he has thrown his hat into the ring. Another fellow by the name of Derek Fildebrandt also threw his hat in the ring. Derek Fildebrandt is contemplating a run.
Is it Doug Schweitzer?
Yes, Doug Schweitzer is the other one.
Yeah.
Doug Schweitzer was, he used to be a sort of, actually he managed Jim Prentice's campaign in 2014, his leadership campaign.
The lawyer,
that went well. And then, yes.
Lawyer, legal
yes,
guy.
He's a lawyer, yes.
Oil patch lawyer, yes, I'm pretty sure.
More than likely.
Yeah.
And then Jason Kenney hasn't officially gone into the race yet, but it is expected he's going
to. Oh, he's so coy, that Jason Kenney. Doesn't keep those cards close, Jace. Yikes, yeah, and it sounds like in terms of popular support that Brian Jean and Jason Kenney are tied. Mm-hmm. So I guess the idea of the merger, as we know, there's two reasons. One is to absolutely crush the NDP and defeat the, what do they call it? The accidental government or something?
That's what
Jason Kenney called
it.
I mean, it's the government's the government. It's like, that weren't no accident, I don't think.
Yeah.
But
I think people knew they were voting for NDP when they voted NDP.
Pretty much. You put that little X there. And I guess ideally they're trying to make this more of a big tent. But it sounds like there's even some dissent. It's all about unity. Yet there seems to be, I don't even know if they're a fringe or how many people, the centrists aren't particularly happy with this Wild Rose merger. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but who was it came out? Richard Stark, who's a PC MLA, said he isn't going to join the new party. He referred to himself as a Lougheed conservative. Mm. And for those that know history, Peter Lougheed was premier from 71, I think. It was like the longest running provincial government we've ever seen, 40 years. Ontario, yeah. I think, was close or neck and neck in terms of however many years. And then, of course, it was the NDP won after the Prentice crushing of, what is that? Was that 2014? You said 2014, that's right.
Well, no, it was 2015, the election. It was 2014 when Prentice became leader because Prentice called an early election, as you'll recall.
So,
and that worked out well for him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was an unfortunate end as well. But,
I'm sure he's making a lot of money where he is now. But
the Alberta Party is sort of touting themselves as an alternative as well. They keep referring to themselves as centrists, the Red Tories, progressive conservatives are welcome.
Yeah,
I think they have one MLA. Is it Greg Clark, who's also the leader?
Mm-hmm.
And they're also part of there's another movement called Alberta Together, which I think, they said they're not affiliated with them, but Alberta Together. So it's weird how this is all this talk of unity and that there's already something that spun off, not unlike Wild Rose did.
Yeah.
On the sidelines, it's like, well, we're not really sure about the Wild Rose joining. Remember, this is echoes of the Reform Conservative marriage all those years ago. Where it was like, oh, they're a little bit too social conservative for me. We're going to form another party and then disappear. Maybe, but Well, Western politics are like not radically different from here, but it's like, you know, the liberals aren't even on the radar, right?
No,
not at all. They just don't really exist. Is this, you know, this newish party, the Alberta Party, going to be the liberals or? But they're there too in the Greens and whatever. But
I mean, that's a good question. Yeah, about where the Alberta Party is going, and from the sounds of it, it might not go too many places right away, or it might, you know, sort of get some steam and then fizzle out when it's actually election is on. I mean, look, there were people, and speaking of comparisons to the federal conservatives, there were people who weren't fond of the Alliance PC merger on the federal level too, and there are people who sat out and said they weren't going to join the new party, and then, you know, a couple of years later they form a government for the first time, a minority government, and kind of haven't seen too many people who, I mean, somebody like Michael Chong, for instance, who is like a red Tory. Mm-hmm. He's still part of a party, even though it seems like the party leaves him behind a lot of the time on a lot of issues. So, you know, people will fall in line, I think. Unfortunately, the Richard Starks of the world will kind of just sit there and, you know, well, I'm not joining this party. And, you know, either he's going to be reaffirmed and he'll sit there by himself as a caucus of one. Next election. Mm-hmm. Or he's going to get ousted by someone who's going to fall, by his constituents are going to fall in behind putting the UCP person in. I would argue that there really is only one issue, and that is getting rid of the NDP.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see if they can put aside the differences, because they've tried this before. Mm-hmm. I can't remember her name. Alison Redford.
Yes.
Took while there was MLAs, joined the PC caucus, but this was back during the Jim Prentice days. Mm-hmm. What happened? None of them got the PC ticket when the time That's came right, to though. get on the ballot for the next election. Everybody went back to PCs.
Including the leader. What was it? There's for 10 points. What was her name again? The leader at the time.
Redford.
No. The leader of the Wild Rose defectors.
Yeah, wasn't that Alison Redford?
No, it was, oh boy. Oh, Google, save us. Yeah, so one of the comments that came out of this was that I thought was interesting was that one of the party faithful was saying, or the new party faithful
Daniel
was saying.
Daniel Smith.
Daniel Smith, there you go. You get 9 points because it was Google. We have plenty of time to beat the crap out of each other in the coming months. So this is somebody saying that, okay, we've united.
Stay classy.
We've united, and now we're going to just kind of beat on each other till we sort out what it's kind of like sending the brothers out in the backyard to sort it out, you know, and that's like, okay, we're good now.
Well, so, it's a question of how much can they sort out, because the leadership convention is at the end of October.
Yeah.
So how much can you hash out in 2 months or 3 months?
Maybe they'll sort of turn it over to the Manning Center and the Fraser Institute to tell them what they're supposed to think before the election, because they're all, you know, that's all they talk about. Not as much the Fraser Institute, but the Manning Center is like, I think, one of the not so invisible hands that's kind of orchestrating this. Manning is in Preston Manning, for those of you who don't get the connection. So, as in reform. So, yeah, it's fairly obvious that, like you said, the goal is to the cream. What was the language has been to grow? We're going to cream the NDP. We're going to. I've never heard them say murder, but it's kind of like that never should have been the government.
Well, they walk up to the line. It seems like the real issue is the fact that there's an NDP government in charge, mm-hmm, of Alberta.
Who are not anti-pipeline, by the way. Like, it's not,
they're not anti-pipeline. No. They're not saying,
but the carbon tax, oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're not saying we're going to shut off all the oil.
And the gays. Jeez. And the, that's another thing.
It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, Rachel Notley is definitely going to be having some issues coming up with trying to make sure certain pipelines through certain other provinces that are right next to Alberta kind of carry on, and also having to deal with that NDP government. If that's going to throw in stark relief just how maybe different of an NDP premier she is. So there's that struggle, and it's purely about, and I can't help but shake the feeling there's also misogyny to it as well, because she's a woman.
Well, like that target range or whatever. Was it a driving range instead of a picture of her face, and you can drive golf balls at it? I mean, that's not cool.
No.
No matter who it is. I don't care what your politics are. That's just juvenile and
Yeah, so it's
possibly misogynist.
She's left wing. She's a woman. She's in charge of Alberta right now. She was duly elected, which I think is the biggest sticking point of all.
Oh no, it was an accident. Didn't you hear? No.
But, I mean, but that's what they say.
It was a big whoopsie. The NDP,
right? They don't want to legitimize her. And then on top of that, I don't know where I was going on top of that, but it just there's the feeling that the Conservatives are the natural ruling party of Alberta because it's been happening so long. So they're focused purely on the math of if we put our two camps together, we will
prevail.
And then somebody from the National Post, John Robson, points out that Brian Jean, if you ask people what Brian Jean stands for, a lot of people can tell you. Because Brian John's job as Wild Rose leader has been to, as Robson put it, keep the right-wing trolls under the bridge. So, and we saw a lot of that with the Canadian Alliance, and we, you know, that there were these people. I remember there was somebody in Northern Ontario who put out campaign literature, like a flyer or something, with a picture of them with the deer they choked with their bare hands. Like, look how manly I am. I choked a deer with my bare hands. And it's like, you're not going to win moderate voters with that kind of thing. You might win people who are like, I don't really trust any party, so this guy's fine. But, you know, so when you have one of these parties that is sort of built on the need to keep certain people, you know, quiet.
The letting too many in crowd, right?
So I understand the optics of the math. I do wonder how much this will be a battle on two fronts. Yes, they want to battle the NDP to take back control of the province, but they're going to have to battle each other first to set the right tone to attract the right number of moderates and the right number of centrists in order to do that. Because if you get several Wild Rose people running for MLA who start saying crazy things like this Nathan Cooper chap, who once was like the head of the Canada Family Action committee, which was all about being anti-gay.
They don't like the gay agenda.
You know, even
they?
In Alberta, that's not going to help.
And he's the interim leader, right?
He's the interim leader.
Oh, great.
And he's a Wild Rose MLA, which is, I mean, the Wild Rose had more MLAs than the PCs before they merged. Mm-hmm. But still.
Maybe he's changed his mind.
Well, he did. He said.
Did he? Oh, okay. There you go.
There were lots of things I didn't understand then that I know now.
I don't understand.
It's like, really? You didn't understand human rights 10 years ago?
What's
awesome.
Gay?
Anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
we wanted to talk about this because it sort of fits into, you know, something we're seeing in terms of the rise of sort of the elements that elected Donald Trump last year. This Facebook group, Ontario Proud, it's the biggest political Facebook group covering Ontario politics. It kind of claims to be nonpartisan, but if you go on the website, it's very clearly anti-liberal, anti-Kathleen Wynne, anti-Justin Trudeau. I will admit, I was on there earlier, and they have a picture of Justin Trudeau in like a hoodie, doing like kind
funny.
Of like a gang sort of arms crossed, leaning to the side kind of thing. And then somebody posted a thing that said "straight out of the drama class."
Oh,
and
that's pretty good.
That made me laugh. But I mean, the rest of it is it's just kind of disgusting. And the CBC wrote an article about it where and chose some quotes. One person calling Kathleen Wynne a snot-faced witch with a W, and that was kind of like the most benign of the comments they cherry-picked.
Yeah.
And so, you know, speaking of misogyny.
Well, yeah, and this is them playing that whole, the folksy personal page card, because I wouldn't say I was duped, but it started coming up in my feed on a, you know, suggested post, like, you might like this, Ontario Proud. And it was these things like complaining about electricity rates is their one of their number one things. And everybody does it because like, my bill's too damn high. I didn't use any electricity, but yet I have to pay a bunch of money.
Delivery charges.
Or the North Bay. It was an interesting story about the North Bay Legion having to close because their bill, they said their bill was $49,000, which I still find hard to believe. You would think over a number of years, but they were saying that was 1 year. Anyway, so these kinds of things get shared because it pisses people off. And they're like, I can't believe this. Why is this happening? Another one of the stories that was getting shared around by them was the famous, now famous staircase in the park in Etobicoke where a guy went and built a crappy set of stairs just to make a point. And now, like, magically, It obviously worked because they're being built this week, right? Yep. It caused such a furor. So that worked. But, of course, the Terra Prime is like, see, it was going to cost $65,000. It was going to cost $100,000. What a waste of taxpayers' money, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Without any context, it's just like, so this guy built a $500 rickety set of stairs, and we're all supposed to be happy. So this is their, this is how they play it. Now, I didn't – Ontario Pride is actually a registered not-for-profit. I didn't know this. So you have to do a little bit of digging beyond the, oh, Ontario Proud, yes, I'd love to be an Ontarian. But it would seem that it's run by a couple of what I would – has been labeled as Tory operatives.
Yeah.
Jeff Ballingall and Ryan O'Connor. You may remember Ryan O'Connor. I think he was involved in the Waterloo conservative, you know, let's take over the groups on campus. A couple of young fellows. Let's take over the groups on campus.
Here.
And yeah, exactly. It spread from the other cities. So the Tories used to accuse the, what was the group called? Is it still around? Working Families? Does that still exist? The Tories always like, Working Families is a liberal front.
I think so.
So, of course, to me, this is the same kind of thing. Just not even the opposite. It's the same thing. It's just another. It poses Working Families or Ontario Proud, but there is an agenda behind it. I thought the weirdest posting was the one about the tick making you allergic to meat. They made this little montage. What do you call them? You just have the titles, no speaking, and like a minute long.
I think that's just called a video.
Is it a video? The kids still call that a video? I was watching a video about the tick.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
And this is kind of thing like that has the tick that makes you allergic to meat has nothing to do with Kathleen Wynne or the Liberals or Justin Trudeau, but somehow it's going to be spun like, you see, they're, you know, global warming's a fraud, so, you know, the ticks are getting bigger. I don't know.
It's somebody interesting will. You point that out because there was also Christine Allen. There was a post about her on there. And if you don't know that name, she was the woman who was charged with poisoning kids under her care.
Yeah.
She was released on parole this week.
We're not tough enough on these. Is over there.
That was the thing.
Kathleen Wynne's fault.
Kathleen Wynne and Justin Trudeau. And then, of course, if you looked under this post, there was a video attached to it that was specially made. And this is the interesting part, too, is they have a video budget. These aren't like videos they're pulling off of Reddit or other places
They're
production.
Yeah, because they all look the same, so you know that this whoever is turning them out is turning them out.
Yeah, they have a production budget.
It's not just like and share.
Right.
If you agree.
So, they put together this video, and then underneath you read the comments, and it's like, well, I'm surprised Justin didn't give her $10 million. And it's just like, one doesn't have anything to do with the other. And you know what? You have your problems with the legal system. I understand that. But judges are following the law.
Mm-hmm.
They're not taking orders from Kathleen Wynne or Justin Trudeau or whoever.
But they are. And interestingly to me, too, speaking of the Sears boycott, like that was getting traction on their site as well, which is something you'd say was pro-worker or whatever. But yet, you know, right next to it is the $15 minimum wage is going to ruin the province.
Right.
It's like that back-to-back, because there's lots of people working at Sears that don't make $15. So on the one hand, it seems like this, oh, we're pro-worker and we're pro the people of Ontario. And then it's like, one of the slick videos, which is in-house, it seems, is about $50 minimum wage is going to ruin everything. Everything's going to be more expensive. Everybody's going to die. Like, that's the impression you get.
Or so there's that restaurant that had the sign that was like, enjoy your $20 cheeseburger.
Oh, the guy in London.
Yeah.
Who also hosted the fascists. Yeah, that's some story. We should talk about that one day. After their march. Took a picture outside, yeah. So that's the edge that we're teetering on. You have people that are definitely not happy with the Wynne government. They're not happy with the Liberals and the way the province is going, and big bills for their electrical bill, which I think everyone agrees needs to be sorted out.
Right.
And yet, there's this edge where it's like it goes into that realm of like the, they're letting too many in. That's my default. But that's the voice I hear when I think Ontario Proud.
There's a perfect storm because we're going into an Ontario election next year where a lot of people are looking at the options and they aren't liking them. They don't, you know, they've seen Kathleen Wynne. She's done 4 full years almost as premier. And on top of that, like almost 15 years of Liberal rule. So there's just like straight up fatigue. And even people who are Liberal are feeling the fatigue. You have Patrick Brown who has you know, enjoyed some by-election victories, but on the other hand, he hasn't really done much in terms of announcing policy, in terms of taking a stand on anything, just, you know, sort of just being anti-liberal. He's sort of rode the coattails of the high prices.
Speech impediment, now it's gone. That's all I see is that. And it's
You know what? I do find something charming about that.
And, I know, but it plays over and over. Like, is this all you got, man? I mean, great. Well, I mean, I'm glad you don't have a speech impediment anymore, but it's like, I think people want a bit more meat than that. But they might not be able to eat it.
I question whether or not
tick.
People want more meat than that, because I think he's borrowing quite liberally, pun intended, from others with the initials JT on with the personal anecdote stuff. But then Andrea Horvath, I haven't heard too terribly much from her.
She had her
chance last election, and it kind of blew up in her face. And
not
she's,
on the radar at all.
Yeah, and she's unfortunately, she's kind of leader right now because no one else kind of wanted it.
I think she got a fairly high percentage vote in terms of, I think it might have even been in the 80s to keep her on. So.
Sure, but I mean, there were a lot of people mad at how the last election turned out. Yeah. And then when they asked for a show of hands about who might want to take the NDP leadership, everyone had full pockets. And certainly the most high-profile NDP MPP now doesn't have his eyes set on provincial leadership.
You mean Jagmeet?
Yeah.
Singh. Yeah, and in some ways, Ontario Proud is a stroke of genius, if indeed 130,000 genuine, real people are following them on Facebook.
Sure.
Number of people alone could tip an election.
I mean, three times as many that people that follow Kathleen Wynne on Facebook.
Yeah, so, and I mean, and we know the Liberals are pretty much down in the dumps in terms of polling right now. Like, it's not good. It's at one point, Kathleen Wynne was at 10%.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who you are. It's very difficult to recover from numbers that low. So I don't know if the question is, will we see a change in government? It's going to be like, how hard is the trouncing going to be? That's just my opinion. And it probably isn't going to be the NDP because, as you say, they're not even on the radar provincially at all. I honestly can't recall in the past, what's going on? So it looks like it's going to be a battle royal between the usual two.
Well, you know who would be a good person to ask about some of this?
Mm-hmm.
Liz Sandals.
Yes.
She'll be here in a couple of weeks.
Cool.
We'll have Liz Sandals here on August the 10th. She is our local MPP and the Treasury Board President. And then this is a new announcement. Marwan Tabara, who is the MP of Kitchener South Hespler, will be joining us on August the 24th. So I have that confirmed. And we're hoping to squeeze in a couple more guests as summer rolls on. So don't change that dial. If you still listen to us on a device with a dial, you maybe don't.
I do.
Oh, there you go.
Surprise.
I know. I know there are people out there who do. You can stay connected to us on the computer at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and you can listen to this and past episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. I will be back on the radio next Thursday at 10 a.m. for the end credits show. That's movie news and reviews. And I can also be found on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. Follow me, and I will be your friend on Facebook if you mention the show. And I blog at a place called The Spanner Book, which seems to be exploding with local issues. So I've turned into a local blogger. I don't know about of note, but I just seem to talk about my neighborhood. So if you're interested in what goes on in the ward, check it out. It just comes out on a Saturday morning over cornflakes. You know?
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's what blogging's all about.
It's amazing what we can do with computers now.
Hopefully no slap suits or legal action. But in my
stay tuned for Scotty's slap suit. I'm not sure if DJ sounds good to me, is going to be here in person or not, but she will likely be here in some form at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. Otherwise, we'll be back here live in person next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and see you then.